You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues of our lives, and this is where we get to meet our neighbors on the radio. And our guest on this hour is Rachel Cullinan. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here this morning. And what I start guests with are just a simple question: who are you? Which is, like, I know, like a loaded question, but it's, and well, people cringe. But, you know, what's a story that kind of illustrates your life, or what are some of the labels that you wear? People come at this in different ways. How would you like to start our conversation and begin to get to know you?
Well, I suppose what I do for a living is kind of a relevant story. Mm-hmm. I am director of study abroad at Ithaca College, and people often ask how I came into doing that line of work, and the story behind that is pretty much the story that created me as who I am today. Mm-hmm. So the summer after I should have been graduating from college, I ended up having the opportunity to go to Italy for a 3.5-week summer program. And at the time, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was a dance major, but really didn't know where I was going with that. And this was a 3.5-week dance program. So I decided to go on it. I ended up taking an intensive Italian class before I left so I could say a few words, which covered the equivalent of a year's worth of college-level Italian in 4 weeks. Pretty intense. It was very exciting, though, learning that quickly. And got on a plane to Italy a couple days later and fell in love with it, with everything, the entire experience, being able to speak the language, the people. It just was absolutely life-transforming from the very moment my feet touched the ground, pretty much. And I ended up being the official translator for the group, which, as you might imagine, was amusing. Uh-huh. After 4 weeks of Italian, I mistranslated many times, and ended up, because of that experience, coming home, becoming an Italian major, and going back to Italy for a full academic year. Spent about 3 years in Italy altogether, became an Italian teacher, started directing study abroad programs in Italy, which led me into study abroad in general. So wow. That first introduction to being abroad and to Italy was truly life-shaping for me.
Right. And change, yeah, yes. And took your indirection or whatever you had been kind of it sounds like you were aimless.
I definitely was.
And we'll get more back to some of those issues as we go along. So you brought some music with you.
I did.
And we're going to start with Bach's Concerto for Solo Cello number 1 in G major with Yo-Yo Ma. And that was Yo-Yo Ma and Bach's Concerto for Solo Cello. And our guest on this hour in the Made of Clay Report is Rachel Cullinan. So, Rachel, what led up to that time of indecision? Where were you? How did you get started in this world?
back when I was in college, you mean, that era. Yeah. Well, I went to college quite convinced that doing theater is what I wanted to do with my life. My father was a set designer, and so I kind of grew up with theater being a part of my life and had the opportunity to see a lot of the shows he was involved in on Broadway and elsewhere. And I got to college and had, I think, a realization that I probably wasn't good enough to really do theater professionally. Partially that was due to an acting teacher who didn't take me seriously as a student and basically said in a fairly straightforward way, you know, I don't think you have any future doing this. And that was hard to hear, even though I had been thinking it myself. And I ended up at that point taking a year off of college, not so much because of academic reasons, but more because of romantic reasons. I was in a relationship, and that person decided that he was going to move to Florida, so I decided I would do the same, thought I might transfer colleges and such. Didn't end up working out that way. But during that year off, just did a few different things, came back to college a year later, switched to being a dance major with the idea that I might go into dance therapy, but still wasn't convinced. Definitely didn't have the dance background to really dance professionally either. So I was just a bit aimless in that the things that I really wanted to do, the things that felt like they were calling me, just felt like I wasn't quite at the level to be able to really take off with them on a professional basis. And the trip to Italy just came along. It just came along at the right time for me. It was that was really an instance of being in the right place at the right time.
Your story raises a really interesting set of questions. You know, when you describe yourself as being drawn but not feeling confident that you could do either the theater or the dance piece, and then this teacher tells you you don't have it in you. How would you deal with the student coming with that, with the clear interest, but also the doubt? I'm wondering, how that seemed to have put you in what ended up being a good direction away, but how do you empathize with students who have to process that feedback, and how do you give that feedback?
Yeah. I think that particular professor did not do a particularly good job dealing with it. It was a very unpleasant moment, as you might imagine, and certainly didn't make me feel too good about myself for a while thereafter. But I think there were some personality issues there. There was something about me that this particular individual just didn't like, which was very rare for me. I'm very much a person who gets along and wants to get along with people. Yeah. So having to deal with people who just sort of right off the bat seemed to not like me was challenging and still is challenging for me today.
And give you no clue on how you could work on what it is that you desire. I think that sounds like what was missing was, like, if you don't like my feedback, here's how we can work on it to try to find a different answer. And there was no willingness.
No, there really wasn't, not on her part.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, she didn't, it wasn't a conservatory training program. She didn't have the ability to kick me out of the program or anything. Right. So I certainly could have persevered.
And some students do through degrees where they're not really feeling connected and where they're not really wanted.
In retrospect, I think that teaching dance or teaching theater would have been an excellent option. But at the time, I saw that sort of as a failure to a certain extent, to someone who really wants to do that, you know, as their life's work. The idea of being a teacher, you know, there's that old saying of
them's that can them's that can't teach, and those who can't teach, preach.
Yeah. I never heard that part of it.
Becoming out of the ministry, I got familiar with that one. But what's really striking to me is that you, in your story about learning Italian and taking on this enormous, in a certain sense, risk and becoming the translator and making all these mistakes, you certainly weren't good at it at that point, but you were committed to it.
And yes.
What changed in you between those earlier two experiences and that one?
I have to believe it was Italy. I mean, I still to this day so vividly remember the first night upon arrival in this little town called Urbino, which is in central Italy, walking into town for the first time, walking through the Renaissance walled city, you know, into the main gate, up the main hill, very steep hill, cobblestoned, and feeling like I had literally just stepped back into time. Mm-hmm. Never been any place like that before. And it was just, I could feel the change starting to happen at that moment. And I tell my students this all the time, even 20 plus years later, that remains that 3.5 weeks, despite the fact that I returned to Italy many times after that just remains for me truly the best time of my life, the most eye-opening, the most transformative. And I still remember this feeling of having sort of this cauldron inside me that was bubbling with this feeling of change, and that I could almost like look into myself and see that happening.
Yes, yes. And one of the things that we've talked about on this show is when things strike you intellectually in a dynamic way, emotionally and physically, when the three come together, there's a quality of truthfulness there that doesn't exist if it's just on one or the other. Mm-hmm. And when what you describe is just an openness that happened on all three levels,
yeah,
that just that your life suddenly quit being constrained, and you became a possibility rather than a past.
Wow.
Where would you like to go to next for our next little bit of music here?
Let's see. Well, it seems to make sense to go to our Italian song, by a popular Italian pop artist named Alex Britti.
Solo una volta.
Sì.
C'era la luna, c'erano le stelle, c'era una nuova emozione sulla pelle, c'era la notte, c'erano i fiori, anche al buio si vedevano i colori, c'era la voglia di stare ancora insieme, forse per gioco comunque ci viene, andare in giro mano nella mano e raccontarci che per noi il mondo è strano. C'era una volta, forse erano due, c'era una mucca, un asinello e un bue, c'era una notte con una sola stella, però era grande, luminosa e bella. E se ci va, magari andiamo al mare, così nell'acqua potremo sguazzare e poi nuotare e fare il morto a galla. Controlleremo se la luna è ancora gialla, sì. E mentre gli altri ancora dormono, magari sognano di noi. E mentre il cielo si schiarisce, noi guarderemo stanotte che finisce. Il tempo va, passano le ore, e finalmente faremo l'amore. Solo una volta o tutta la vita, speriamo prima che l'estate sia finita. Il tempo va, passano le ore, vorrei poter non lavare l'odore di questa notte ancora da capire, però peccato che dovrà finire. Oh. Tutto è già passato, peccato che non l'ho ancora capito. Anche se non sei più tra le mie dita, stanotte la ricorderò tutta la vita. E se domani sentirò la tua mancanza, sarà perché non ho più cielo nella stanza. Avrò una foto per ricordare di quando quella notte ti potevo dire. Il tempo va, passano le ore, e finalmente faremo l'amore. Solo una volta o tutta la vita, speriamo prima che l'estate sia finita. Il tempo va, passano le ore, vorrei poter non lavare l'odore di questa notte ancora da capire, però peccato che dovrà finire. Oh. Se non ho più parole
That was Alex Briti and Solo Una Volta. And our guest on this hour is Rachel Cullinan, and you're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca. So, Rachel, what brought you to Ithaca specifically, and what keeps you here?
Well, what brought me to Ithaca is essentially the job I currently have. Mm-hmm. Back in 1999, I was actually headed to Wisconsin to Madison to do a PhD program in Italian. And I really wasn't sold on the idea at all, but it seemed to kind of be the logical next step after finishing a master's degree and kind of what do you do with languages if you want to teach at the higher education level, you kind of need that PhD. So I wasn't really excited about it, but it was the direction I was heading in. And at the time, my mom was also looking for a job and happened upon the listing for the job as assistant director of study abroad at Ithaca College. And she sent it along to me, and I thought, why not? I'll apply. Uh-huh. And I had never been to Ithaca, but kind of knew of it. Actually, had considered applying to Ithaca College as a teenager, applying to colleges for the first time. And came here for an interview. And well, actually, the first interview was a phone interview that was done, I remember it very vividly, from a public phone booth in Venice alongside the Grand Canal, because I was directing a study abroad program in Italy that semester. Wow. So, you know, I was trying to hear the questions above the sounds of the boats going by and such. So that seemed quite appropriate. And I came for the interview, and it went quite well, and I was offered the job and decided to take mm-hmm. it and started in August of 1999. So the job has developed some, and title has changed a little bit, but it's essentially the same work that I came here to do. Mm-hmm. And I love Ithaca. It's a great place to live. Winters are a bit too long for me, but mm-hmm. Very happy here, especially raising a child here. I mm-hmm. think it's a wonderful place for that. So I don't anticipate leaving anytime soon.
Right. No, you found a place, and it mm-hmm. seems like that, again, you were faced with this kind of likely next step that you weren't fully committed to, yeah. and something else came to take its place.
Yeah.
And we think of it because a lot of people work very hard to get to Ithaca. Sometimes we forget that some people just fall into Ithaca.
Yeah.
And that story about the interview on the while you're in the canal, along the canal, is just absolutely wonderful. Yeah,
when I took students to Italy, before Elliot was born, before my mm-hmm. son was born, mm-hmm. I used to take students to Italy in the summers, and I would actually show them. Mm-hmm. That was the phone booth where I had my interview for this first job.
That's great. So how, you know, what are some of the issues and things that you care about that motivate your life here in Ithaca, whether through work or your avocation?
Well, I'm a single mom, and I guess that's something I care about a lot, not the idea of there being support networks out there, right. for parents.
That it be a viable,
for any
really,
kind of parents, yeah, yeah. not just single mothers and fathers, but anyone. And I can't say that that's something I have actively worked towards developing in the community, simply because there's not a whole lot of time working right. full-time and right. being a single mom. But it's something I care a lot about and talk with friends a lot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Something that I think, even in a community like Ithaca that's, you know, very family-friendly and very mm-hmm. child-friendly, is still lacking. You know, where do you bring a child on a snow day when you absolutely have to go to work?
Right.
What are the resources that are out there? And there's not a lot.
Right. And one of this raises an issue. There are many things that we can provide with paid substitutes. But for a lot of the informal kind of care that happens within family or extended family or neighborhood community, mm-hmm. we cannot substitute paid professional care.
Yeah.
So when you say that all you can really do is talk with others about it, one of the this is I maybe sound like I'm pressing a point a little far, but one of the meanings of the term prayer is to plead your case,
mm-hmm.
and when people tell their stories to each other in that open sort of way, they're not necessarily expecting people to step up and fix it.
Sure.
But they just want people to know what's going on in their lives. And then things begin to fall into place,
mm-hmm.
or it becomes a little less hard to cope with what doesn't get fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that is a version or an understanding of prayer or pleading in the public life that we don't really take very seriously, but we need to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and you also, you haven't abandoned theater. We met in Parent Stories.
Yes, we did.
Civic Ensemble's first public offering as, mm-hmm. as civic theater. What keeps you connected to theater at this point, or reconnects you at this mm-hmm. point in your life?
Well, it really is a reconnection, because for many, many years I didn't have any opportunity to do theater at all, and it was something I missed. Mm-hmm. I really missed it. Other than a couple of opportunities to do a reading of the Vagina Monologues with Downing Corning over the last 6 or 7 years, I really hadn't had any opportunity to be involved in theater until last year with mm-hmm. Parent Stories, and it was such a welcome re-addition to my life. It feels very, very good to be involved with theater mm-hmm. again, and this particular kind of theater, you know, presents a whole different set of challenges, creating a show from scratch with just, you know, a bunch of people who have self-identified as interested in that particular topic is very interesting, and not the kind of theater I had done previously.
Right. It's not so much about hitting the performance marks as hitting the expression, the art, mm-hmm. and the issues.
Yeah.
Clearly. Yeah. How does it feel different to you to be a performer in a civic theater show as opposed to what you did back in high school or college?
Right. Well, it's been so long.
I can't really remember that.
I mean, you know, the obviously being presented with a script at the very first day mm-hmm. That you're working with a group is quite different than having a script evolve and mm-hmm. develop out of your work together. There's a lot more ownership of the process and of the final product in this model with Civic Ensemble than there is when, you know, you're just producing and being involved in a play that's been produced many times, and it might be slightly different this time, but it's really just, you know, people know what to expect when they go to see certain types of plays or certain mm-hmm, plays.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I think here we find that the people coming to see the plays don't necessarily know what to expect, especially if they have no experience seeing this sort of theater mm-hmm. before. And I find that kind of exciting, you know, opening people's eyes to the fact that, yeah, a group of people who perhaps have no theater background can get together and create something meaningful and powerful.
Yeah. And also it makes you a different kind of actor.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the experience was trying to both hold on to the integrity of my own experience as a parent, but also to be available to reveal experiences that others had shared, mm-hmm. Who I knew and cared about.
Yeah.
And so we're enacting. I mean, and this is a ritual mm-hmm. in many ways, which was another piece of public life that we've kind of lost.
Yeah.
With television and all the other yeah. kinds of movies and entertainment that feeds us stuff that's been pretty prepackaged mm-hmm. rather than what we create and package ourselves.
Yeah.
So you're in Safety.
Yes, I am.
Do you want to say a little bit about that show and what drew you to it?
Certainly. Well, I knew I was going to be involved in Civic Ensemble's second production well before they selected the topic for it, mm-hmm. Having been involved in Parent Stories.
So you were that deeply committed. The Parent Stories piece really
absolutely.
Got you.
I mean, okay. it was the fact of being re-involved in theater mm-hmm. that was mm-hmm. the primary thing, and any opportunity to regularly continue to be involved in theater was naturally very appealing to me. But I enjoyed the process. I enjoyed working with Sarah and Godfrey mm-hmm. and I know when they announced the topic of safety and community police relations, I felt, you know, parenting is something I have a very direct and strong relationship with, and I felt I had a lot to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. I came into this feeling like I really had very little to bring to the table. I've, while I have opinions and watch the news and realize that this is a very current issue and of great concern, personally, I've had virtually no interaction with the police during mm-hmm. my life. And I think part of me realizes that there's significant privilege in that. And I think that made me uncomfortable, feeling like, you know, because I'm white, because I've grown up where I have, I haven't had to deal with that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a sense of, you know, a sense of the privilege that I have had was making me uncomfortable, that I didn't have my own stories to bring to the table about this. But I quickly found that we all have experiences mm-hmm. about everything. It doesn't necessarily have to be personal experiences, but everyone has something to bring to the table in these productions, in these...
And one of the things, having seen parents' stories in the dress rehearsal, it seems that the stories of privilege are actually told
yeah.
fairly clearly.
I think so.
And that's something that often doesn't enter the debate when yeah. it's a topic of intellectual discussion. This is much more of an experience.
Absolutely.
How did you feel like you were given, or the parts that you gravitated to? How did you assume those characters?
I think one of them, where I'm playing a white woman who had a history of sort of minor law breaking as a teenager, but never suffered any consequences mm-hmm. as a result of mm-hmm. that. And while it's not stated outright in the monologue, is addressing that exact mm-hmm. feeling sure. that I've had, that, you know, I personally didn't have that particular history, but felt that and could see that depending upon who you are and what you look mm-hmm. like and your class and all of those things, where you are socially, economically, et cetera, is going to impact greatly whether or not there are consequences for mm-hmm. you if you get involved with certain things. So I think that particular monologue, I was very happy to be assigned that one mm-hmm. because it felt like it gave me an opportunity to address those concerns that I had.
What do you, and I know you can't speak for the cast, and the cast is incredibly diverse on certain points of view, mm-hmm. But what do you hope that this play will kind of open up or make, why spend all the time doing these 7 performances?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ithaca is a place right now, like many, that need to be discussing this issue, mm-hmm. this issue in particular, and I think Ithaca is a place where there's truly the possibility that these discussions can lead somewhere. I mm-hmm. think in some places that wouldn't be the case, but Ithaca is a place that is open to mm-hmm. that, and where community members are open to getting involved
right.
and having the discussions even when they're difficult, and working with people who are different from them, I think by and large. So I think starting the conversation, and it's been very encouraging, the post-show talkbacks with the audience, they've been very engaged and very interested in starting the conversation mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. then and there, and it just gives you a glimpse into
what
people could be doing. Yeah.
What struck me about the show was that while it deals head-on with racial profiling mm-hmm. as well as other issues about class and race, but it also deals really with the way the public profiles police.
Yes.
And we don't normally think of it mm-hmm. as police profiling,
right.
but we do profile police
yeah.
in ways that are often damning
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily any more accurate than the way racial profiling works. And what got to me was how clearly the show made that case. So you end up with a tremendous amount of understanding
yeah.
and of why everybody is angry and frustrated and why nobody is really happy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Will you be around for the? Do you anticipate continuing with Civic Ensemble, or what are you looking for?
Yes.
Theater wise,
yeah, I yeah. certainly hope to continue to be involved each yeah. year in their production.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really, really neat. It's also like another community.
It is. Yeah. It really is. I felt, and it's been interesting being involved now in 2 years in a row with very different groups of mm-hmm. individuals. The cast for Parent Stories was quite different than the cast for Safety.
Yep.
And it's just been a fascinating process, and I've been extremely impressed working with the individuals in Safety about how open everyone was, regardless of what their background was, with the kind of activities Sarah led us through. Mm-hmm. They were just wide open to just jumping right in, you know, not holding back at all, and really just committing themselves to each and every activity, improv, whatever she wanted us to mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. Everyone was right there with no hesitation, and that's unusual, especially for people who haven't necessarily been involved in theater or theater games, that sort of thing before.
Right. And I'm going to put in a plug for Civic Ensemble and where you can go find out about the shows, because there are many, four more performances next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's civicensemble.org, CIVICENSEMBLE.org. And you can find out also about how to get involved.
Yes.
In the theater. I'm going to do the station ID while you pick your next song. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives, where we meet our neighbors on the radio. And our guest on this hour is Rachel Cullinan.
How about if we go with Sweet Honey in the Rock and Wanting Memories?
Oh, good.
Sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. You used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. You said you'd hold me till the pains of life were gone. You said you'd comfort me in times like these, and now I need you, now I need you. And you are gone. I am sitting here wanting memories to to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. Since you've gone and left me, there's been so little beauty, but I know I saw it clearly through your eyes. Now the world outside is such a cold and bitter place. Here inside I have few things that will come. And when I try to hear your voice above the storms of life, then I remember all the things that I was told. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I think on the things that make me feel so wonderful when I was young. I think on the things that make me laugh, make me dance, make me sing. Think on the things that make me grow into a being full of pride.
Sitting here wanting memories to teach me to
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this hour is Rachel Cullinan. Rachel, I'm going to ask this question about how have you changed and how have you become more deeply the same over the years? I think it's important for us to talk about these issues because oftentimes we know each other in a moment of time, and yet we're all kind of moving targets over the course of our lives. So where have you had to kind of let go of things that you thought were really important but aren't so much so, or where have you dug in for things that you didn't realize were so important?
Well, certainly becoming a mother and a parent has changed a lot for me. My son has struggled with eating his entire life, and I've struggled with eating my entire life in a different way. I have had eating disorders my entire life, specifically bulimia since I was 12. And my son doesn't eat very much, and his eating has often been a cause for concern for us over the years. Even as a newborn baby, he was not interested in nursing or eating. He seems to have been born without some kind of physical controls to say, you know, I need nutrition, I need food, I'm hungry.
And it's so he has such a little desire that it does compromise his health?
It easily could.
It could. Okay.
It could, especially as a baby and a young toddler. There was cause enough for concern that we even went to a feeding clinic program for 3 weeks, which ended up being actually not helpful at all, but at the time seemed to be potentially an answer.
So you cast about looking for things to do.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as we all do prior to becoming parents, we very strongly will state, you know, there are certain things I would never do as a parent, or certain things I would never allow my child to eat, and et cetera, et cetera. And I've had to pretty much accept that if it has calories and he'll eat it, it's good.
Right.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Not that I don't still have concerns about, you know, the variety or lack thereof of his diet and whether he's getting the nutrients he needs. But he's nearly seven now, and he's a smart little boy, and he's in second grade. And I think I've come to realize over the, you know, the last 3 or 4 years that while his diet may not be ideal, it's clearly not hampering him to you know, be a normal little boy with normal levels of energy and normal development. So I've had to kind of let go of a lot of that tension and concern.
And tension and concern that was rested in your own body,
yes,
in your own experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sometimes our children force us to grow up.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of a tough truth.
Yes, but certainly it's been an interesting struggle, struggling with my own very different issues with food and his at the same time. I often will joke that, you know, I spent in my entire life reading nutrition labels on packages looking for the things that had the fewest calories and the fewest grams of fat, and then that completely switched. Now when I shop for him, I look for the one with the most grams of fat, the most calories per piece.
Yeah.
It's a completely opposite.
Yeah. So that's kind of both a change and a deepening all wrapped up into one.
Yeah.
How is your personal, your identity just as a self? How is that, you know, you've been here for 15 years. That's like a third of a lifetime, or almost between a third and a half of a lifetime. How is life different than you thought it would be?
I think that life is definitely more lonely than I thought it would be. While I have a good network of friends in Ithaca after 15 years, and I have support of family members who don't live in the area, being a single mom without immediate family in the area and without very close friendships is a challenge. And there are times when life just feels very, very lonely. And there are times when that's comfortable loneliness, and there are times when it's saddening.
Right, and lonely can mean solitude, and lonely can mean isolation.
Absolutely.
And those are two very different experiences that we use one word for often.
Certainly. Yeah. And I love solitude, even, you know, time to myself is extremely important mm-hmm. for me. And sure. that's one of the struggles also of being a single parent, of being a parent in general, finding that kind of time when you can be by yourself and do the things that you find to be relaxing and enjoyable and mm-hmm. restorative is challenging for everyone. But I think that finding that time and knowing that often it means I have to pay a babysitter in order to find that time is a real challenge.
Yeah, and it's, you have to pay a babysitter. You also, and to find the time also for your solitude, but also to be in something like Civic Ensemble, mm-hmm. which is feeds you in community, feeds you in other ways artistically.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What would you like to go to next for music?
I think... let's do the Carbon Leaf, Life Less Ordinary. Okay. This one happens to be the version that was in the Curious George movie and not their standard version. Oops.
We're good.
Live a life less ordinary. Live a life extraordinary with me. Live a life less sedentary. Live a life evolutionary with me. Well, I hate to be a bother, but it's you and there's no other. I do believe you can call me naive, but I know me very well, at least as far as I can tell, and I know what I need. The day you came into my life, well, it took the bones of me, took the bones of me. You blew away my storm and strife and shook the bones of me, shook the bones of me. Just in time to catch a ride to something great to come along, and we can leave today. Live a life less ordinary, live a life extraordinary with me. My face had said so much before our hands could even touch to greet a hello. So much for going slow. So race along with me. Let's fill ourselves with curiosity. Search around to find something different every time. Look inside the day. One look is all it really takes to live and learn and grow along every path we go. The day you came into my life, well, it took the bones of me, took the bones of me. You blew away my storm and strife and shook the bones of me, shook the bones of me. Just in time to catch a ride to something great. So come along and we can leave today. Live a life less ordinary, live a life extraordinary with me. If I could name you in this song, would I make you smile and sing along? This is the goal, to get into your soul. If I could make you dance for joy, could that be the second chance to coy the bird in hand I would need to help you understand? The day you came into my life, well, it took the bones of me, took the bones of me. You blew away my storm and strife and shook the bones of me, shook the bones of me. Just in time to catch a ride to something great to come along, and we can leave today.
That was Carbon Leaf and Life Less Ordinary. And our guest on this hour is Rachel Cullinan. Rachel, the way I try to wind up these shows is to focus a little bit on how you, the guest, what you do to sustain yourself, to renew yourself. We talked earlier about the importance of things that are mindful, intellectually satisfying, mm-hmm. emotionally honest, and physically compelling as a way. How do you get your heart, mind and body kind of renewed? What do you do on a daily or weekly or monthly basis?
Not enough, that's
well,
for sure.
That's, that's true for most of
that's
us.
That's for sure, yeah. It's a tough thing to do. I think in Ithaca, hiking mm-hmm. and all of the many wonderful places we have to go is something that is that definitely fits that for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And this summer I haven't gotten out nearly enough, but there's something about being out there in the gorge in the quiet that is truly renewing. Mm-hmm. I remember reading an article once about in Japan how they do forest bathing, they call it, and they actually have forest bathing stations where there's essentially, I guess, sort of beds or lounge chairs set up in areas in the forest, and people just go to absorb the quiet and what the forest has. And I started thinking of my hikes as my forest bathing time, mm-hmm. Just sort of absorbing that quiet and that peaceful feeling. So that is certainly high up on the list. I think I struggle with, it's probably part of my struggle with perfectionism and all or nothingism during my life, but I find it hard to be satisfied with mm-hmm. a couple of hours by myself, sort of being able to do that. The coming back into reality is always difficult. So it's kind of like getting time to myself, getting time to do those things. I end up having to go through this almost like a mourning period of it being over and having to readjust to normal life.
Interesting. I mean, that's all, what you're describing is almost the opposite process from like coming out of a deep meditation, where one in coming into the world, everything strikes you new, and it may all be painful, mm-hmm. but you see things that you were numb to when you come back in. But for you, it's a struggle to come back in.
It is, oftentimes.
Yeah,
yes.
I understand. I've been there too.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you walk to work? Are you among the legions that walk to work?
I could walk to work, but because I have to pick up Elliot at the end of the day, it's not a logistical possibility.
Yeah. And I imagine also from what you've said about Civic Ensemble, theater is one of your restoration.
It is. Spots. It absolutely is. And it was a challenge this time around. Elliot's had babysitters his entire life, but this time we're going through a period of time where he was very resistant to all of the time with babysitters. So it threw a little bit of a problem into the works, where especially this past week he had to have a sitter every single night. And that was a little difficult for us to navigate, but very worth it. I find that my time in these rehearsals, I'm truly focused and not distracted by anything that might be bothering me in the outside world. Mm-hmm. And I would say there aren't too many things where we can just be truly focused on what we're doing. At least that's something I find for myself. It's hard
that
to be
powerful.
Uniquely focused in one thing and not allow outside distractions in.
Right. And you had said something before, too, about your being in conversation with other people about what it's like to be a single mom, mm-hmm. and about the things that you and others are doing and needing. And that we don't often think of that, but those conversations are oftentimes where we put our lives in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of it. I don't mean to be supplying words for your answer, but that's a connection that I would make.
Yes.
We don't see when we see our daily lives as works in progress of making our lives, all of those interactions take on an element that could be restorative.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Once again, I'm going to put in a plug for the safety show. There are four more performances: Thursday evening at Cornell, Friday evening at Ithaca College,
yes.
Saturday afternoon at the Latino Festival, and Sunday early evening at Calvary Baptist Church.
And you can
find it at civicensemble.org. Rachel, is there anything else you'd like to comment on in terms of just what your feelings are for this place and how it's become a home for you?
It is just, I have a line in Safety where we talk about Ithaca, and mm-hmm. we each wrote our own, what we had to say about Ithaca.
Right.
And I start off with saying, Ithaca is where I feel at home, comfortable and welcome. And it is. It's mm-hmm. a very comfortable place and a very welcoming place, I think. And I really can't imagine living someplace else and making a home someplace right. else at this point.
Right. And you're not afraid.
I mean,
to feel safe is to not be afraid.
Yeah.
And one of the things is people who have very low tolerances for fear, if they're easily upset, they're never going to feel at home.
Yeah.
And the thing about this is a place with all the issues that you guys have described,
mm-hmm.
but still it's safe.
It is.
Yes. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
And we're going to close with Keith Jarrett and the Coln Concert. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca,